Welcome to Cinemai Speaks Out. This is a podcast about domestic violence and Cinemai culture. With this podcast, we will hear stories of brave women and men who overcame domestic violence and know more about their cultural upbringing. I'm your host, Jennifer Tamman, and as it is today's first episode, Ms. Catherine will give us the honors of doing the first interview with me. Ms. Catherine has 30 years experience in media and communication in the cinema. Ms. Catherine, thank you for being here. I'm so excited to do this with you.
Oh, I'm excited to be here with you, Jen. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of the podcast series.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So I have mentioned earlier, this is our first podcast and I would like to share my stories. And Ms. Catherine will help me do that.
Thank you, Jen. As I said, it's really a privilege to help you here in your first podcast and to kind of make space for you to share what is really the inspiration for this podcast that you've created. Can you take us back to the beginning of your story when your relationship started? What was it like in the beginning?
In the beginning, head over heels, you know, like I was in love. I was really in love, and I thought, you know, this is the one, right? Like, I guess everyone, I'm pretty sure everyone found their first love already, you know, at this age, and that's what I felt. I found my first love.
Yeah.
And how will I describe our relationship? It was fun, you know, we were young, it was fun and passionate. It was just something I've never experienced in my life, you know. It was something that I told myself I was going to fight for no matter what, because it's such a good feeling to have. So, yeah.
I think everybody can relate to being in love. What were the qualities you saw in him that made you like him so much?
It was just someone that I could talk to. Like, you know, we would always joke and we would stay up all night just talking, telling stories. He was always protecting me, you know. And for some reason, it made me feel like a princess, or like, you know, a queen. And like, I thought I was I was his whole world, and I wanted to give that back to him, like make him my whole world too, you know.
Yeah. I think a lot of people can relate to wanting that feeling where you feel special, you know. Yeah. That special one for you, and you're the special one for them. Would you say your relationship started fast or slow? Like, were you friends for a while, or was it pretty fast?
It was fast. It's almost like it was so fast. I was trying to it's like flash. It's that fast. It's
like a wildfire.
Yeah, like a wildfire. It was fast. Like, you know, like we were seeing each other for a couple, like a month or so, and then next thing I know, we were living together. Like, it was that fast. Yeah. So, it was fast, but like thinking, you know, like growing my heart. Yeah.
So how did you see your relationship start to change? Like, what did you start to notice first?
I started noticing that he started to get more protective over me. Like, you know, like he gets jealous about me being on the phone, hanging out with my friends. And at first I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, he just wants me all the time around him. I get it. But like, sometimes he wouldn't let me go with my friends. And then I'm just like, that's kind of weird already. But I just let it go because I thought like, oh, this guy's just in love with me as much as I am in love with him. So I think that's what first started, when I'm noticing the control. Yeah, but you know, when you're in love, like everything is rainbow and candies, right? So like, you didn't really see the red flags. I didn't see the red flags.
What were you feeling? I mean, did you feel like anything in your gut or anything like that when these first early changes came up? Or did you think it was going to get better?
Did I think it was? Yes. I always had a hope. And, you know, I always believed in our love. And I always believed in my love for him and his love for me, that things will get better, you know. So what I did was, if I couldn't go to my friends, like, I'll make him tag along with me just so that I could see my friends. So, you know, I'm Mikis. So I thought it would, things would change.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, oh, if he sees me hang out with my friends or if he's around there, he's just going to see that we just stay home. Like, we're not doing anything crazy. And maybe he'll try, or like, he'll be okay with me going on my own the next time. Yeah.
It sounds like you were making a lot of accommodations to try to make him happy or to make him more comfortable. Was there anything else you did in the very beginning? Any other way you feel you changed to try to accommodate what you were getting from him, the feedback you were getting from him, or the starting?
Yeah. One of the accommodation I made was I stopped going to school. Because,
really?
Yeah, because it was just like, I guess it's just like hard for him to like know that I need to interact with people, like my classmates.
Jen, that is so serious, really. That is a huge step. How did you feel about that?
Well, at first I was like, it's okay. Like, not it's okay. It's not, it was never okay. But I'm like, well, you know, I wasn't doing well anyways because I was very just our relationship. But so I'm like, it's okay. I'll just, you know, I'll come back next year. I always said I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back next year. I'm going to come back next semester. But I never, like, you know, I never did. And that's one of my biggest regrets, is not going back to school. Like, I was actually a major in education, and that's my passion, like, to teach young kids. And, you know, but I guess my path was taken in another direction.
You're wiping your eyes. Your eyes are watering a little bit.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's because you know, when we're little kids, right? We would play with stuff like kitchen or house or whatever. Like, the things I always play with was lining up my teddy bears and pretending to teach them. So I knew that I wanted to be a teacher since I was young. And that's something I gave up. And
girl, you're still young.
I know. And it's just like talking about it, not just like, you know, I gave that up for this, for my love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point, well, as a matter of context, like, how old were you when you got into this relationship? And then how long were you in the relationship?
How old was I? I believe I was 22, 23. It was, yeah. And I was in the relationship for 8.5 years.
8.5 years.
Yes.
And you don't have any kids, right?
Well, I have a kid of my own from another person, but we don't have kids together.
Okay. At what point in the relationship were your eyes kind of opened and you realized that you were in a domestic violence relationship?
First it was just like, you know, he would just jokingly pull my hair or shove me down the bed. And I thought it was like, I thought we were just like rough housing.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it really got bad is when, I'm trying to remember when was the, it happened so many times, I can't remember when was the first time I got, you know, seriously hit.
Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, I think we were arguing about something, and sorry, I can't recall, but the only thing that I really remember was one time we were arguing about something, and he choked me and then pinned me on the bed with my face facing the bed, and I blacked out and seizure, and I don't know how long that was happening. And then when I woke up, he was just like holding me up and like crying, and I'm like, what happened? And that stand out to me the most, because when I was blacked out, like the only thing I could like remember during that time was I saw my daughter in my dream, I guess, or whatever. Like, she was calling me to come follow her, and I think, and I got up, and in my dream I got up and I woke up and I followed her, but when I woke up, it was like physically woke him that was on top of me or care holding me. And that like, for me, that stands out the most in my memory. But there was like a lot of pushing and, you know, slapping me. Like, I remember there was one time when I followed my friend to hang out at night after work, and I came home and I couldn't answer my phone because my battery died or some reason. It was just like the worst, you know. I came home and it's like all my things were outside the apartment, and he broke my phone. He slapped me around, pulled me around. And then when I decided, like, then when I was allowed to sleep on the bed, he just laid next to me with my body all bruised up. Yeah. Those are the memories that stood out to me the most. Some, like, you know, and it's not vivid anymore in my memory. But yeah.
I really want to thank you for being willing to share your story with us, and really for all the women that are coming up on your podcast you have already spoken with that have agreed to share their stories. And you and I talked about this before the show, when we were preparing for the show, but I wanted to also share with your listeners that I am also a victim of domestic violence, and my story is not as serious as yours in that I was never beat up, but there's a lot of things that go into it, like control, and I know you're going to talk about that a little bit more. And hopefully we can really open people's eyes to what is domestic violence, and what we think might be normal is not necessarily normal. Mm-hmm. What happened to you when you realized that you were in that situation? Did you reach out for help right away, or did you talk to anybody, or how did you deal with it when you realized how serious it was?
No, I didn't. I didn't, because I was ashamed, you know, like, I was ashamed because, like, I fought for him. Like, you know, a lot of my friends and family in the beginning, they're like, he's not good for you. But I'm like, no, he, you know, I fought for him. And, like, then for me to turn around and say, like, oh, he's doing this to me, it's kind of a slap on my face. Like, I slapped myself on the face, and I was ashamed. And also, like, you know, he'd always promise me that, oh, I'm sorry, it's not gonna happen, that's not me anymore, I'm not gonna do this, I'm gonna change. Yeah, so I didn't reach out for help yet. I stayed in that relationship for longer than I'm supposed, I should have.
Was it like you stated it for years after you realized how serious it was getting?
Yeah, I still stayed with him. And then also when I tried to get away from him, let's say I try and break it off, like, the person, like, I'll go to my biological parents are still here, so I would go to their house, and he would just, like, keep begging me to come home. Like, he'll show me the person that I was in love with. You know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I got, you know, I was like, okay, there's a chance there again. So I went back again, not knowing that that's the cycle of it. There's a cycle of, you know, domestic violence. It's the honeymoon phase and all those things.
Would you tell us what you've learned about the cycle so that maybe people can have a better understanding of how it works?
Yeah.
It isn't all bad.
No, it's not. Because, like, there's no reason, like, for my belief, like, there's no way a person would go with someone that they know that is abusive, right? So, like, in the beginning, it's all the I love you, the sweet moments, right? So it's like the honeymoon phase. And then the next one is just a little bit of anger, or you start to see the aggression or the control.
Escalation.
Yeah. And then next is the episodes, like, or that's when they'll, like, show you the real person, you know, the beating up or whatever it is, the insults. Because, you know, I believe, like, domestic violence is not just about physical, right? There's emotional and mental, and it's a whole thing. And after that, you know, when you try to go away, as, you know, you're like, oh, I had enough of this, you try to do better for yourself, they'll, like, show you again that, oh, I'm this person. Remember who I am. Remember you fell in love with this person. So you as a person, you'll be like, yeah, I remember that. Take me back to that place. And then the whole cycle goes back around and around.
Mm-hmm. Very. That's a great description of how it goes from, like, happy to escalation to incident happening. And then I'm sorry. And then happy. And then.
Right.
So when you've finally decided to reach out to your family and friends, what was their response?
I didn't reach out to them. Actually, my family, my friends, they didn't know what was going on with me until I left, because I'm a type of person to keep things to myself. Actually, when I did the inspirational speaking for the proclamation this month for the Domestic Violence Awareness Month, that's the only time my mom and sister knew the extent of what happened to me. Like, all I told them was, I left because I'm tired. I'm tired of being mistreated. That's all I told them. And they just, you know, okay, we're here for you, whatever it is. But I never really shared what the extent of it. And when I did, it was emotional, you know, especially for my mom. She's like, why you never told us? Or, you know, it's not nothing on them, it's me. That I'm not a sharing type of person. I don't, like, you know, it's my problem, so I kind of want to. But, you know, they knew about it. Like, they only knew about it recently. And, of course, they're, like, angry at the person there, but they're so proud of me and supportive of me now. And although they're in the Philippines, I can feel their love all the way here.
Aww. Yeah.
So friends, they were shocked because, like, you know, they always were an happy couple, that, you know, we were doing well, but they didn't know that those just that a show that, you know, I put up or he puts up in public. But behind closed door, they don't know what's really happening, and they're, like, pretty shocked about it. But they're still supportive.
I can imagine part of the reason it was difficult is because you guys were in a relationship for quite a while. I mean, 8 years is a long time of a big investment.
Yeah, it is. You know, like, we kind of grew up together.
So you actually knew each other also before you got into a relationship.
Oh, no. I mean, like, we were 20s together.
Okay. Sorry.
Like, you know, I was 23, and he was just 20. He was younger than me, so 21. So, and then, you know, like, we kind of had our 20s together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was hard, but it's hard to leave someone that you know for almost a decade, right? Like, for that
like
long.
Like a third of your life?
Yeah.
Something? Yeah.
And like you're always with them like 24 hours, almost, unless we go to work. But you know, it was hard.
When you were making that decision to leave, and I do want to ask you a little bit how you went about doing that, but what were the considerations you were making? Like, people would say, like, why did it take you so long? Like, what were the things that were going on in your mind when you were thinking about, should I stay and continue trying to make this work, or should I leave?
Right. You know, like, before, that's what I thought of. Like, should I stay? You know, there's many times I wanted to leave. But like I said, I was always brought back to that cycle, right? I think what really made me decide is just that I was just so unhappy. Like I know, like, I was alive, but I wasn't living. If that makes, you know, like, I was just breathing. Like, there was no life in me. And I knew that's not it for me. Like, I have more than that going on. Like, you know, I have more to offer to the world, for myself, you know, like sometimes, like, I feel like I'm just waiting for myself to die when I was with him. Like, I was so unhappy. And I told myself, no, like, I can. And also, you know, what really pushed me to leave him is because he was doing something that I wasn't agreeing with, you know. I didn't want drugs to be part of my life. Yeah, so I said no. And that was my biggest belief, like, you know, I don't want that. And if you can't respect that, then like, what else is there? You know, like, I'm already living a miserable life, and if we add this factor in, it's just gonna be like worse and worse for me. So that's when I decided to leave.
you felt like you weren't really living. Did you feel like you were getting numb inside? I only ask because that's how I felt. I felt like I couldn't really feel too much happiness. It was like mostly sadness.
Yeah, like, I was numb, and like, every time something good happens, I'm afraid that it's happening, because I know, like, after the good, it's the bad.
Oh.
Yeah. So like, if like he's being sweet to me or whatever, or like we're doing something like a couple thing activity, like, oh, this guy's gonna, like, you know, probably or something, like, the inside, like, I'm already expecting it. Like, oh, he's gonna do something bad, or, you know what, like, and like, I felt like I lost myself already in the process. It's just like, I won't even look, because of the insults that I was getting a lot. It was like an everyday insult. Like, I wasn't looking at myself in the mirror for a while. Like, even if I do look at myself in the mirror, I don't see a reflection. I just see a blur. Like, it's just a blurry image of myself. Like, I don't see who I was. At times, I don't even want to look at the mirror, even after, like, you know, you shower, right? Shower, you look at the mirror. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
I don't, because I don't see me. I don't see Jen. So.
You're crying again.
Yeah, I'm crying again, because now I'm, like, obsessed at looking at myself in the
Jen, that can also be a bad thing if you're looking in the mirror too much.
Yeah, I know. I'm crying because, like, those things, like, you know, you overcome them. You just, like, I've never imagined that this would happen to me. You know, like, you see this in the movies, you see this in the news. But when it's actually happening to you, you don't realize that it's happening to you. And then when you overcome it, you're like, whoa, I just overcome that. Like, you know, I just went through that. And I know, like, I got, like, my my experience. I know like other girls out there like experience worse than I did, and I just hope that they find like strength. Yeah, to look at the mirror too, like I do.
A lot. Yeah. You can look at the mirror a lot. Well, I like that you mentioned that, well, we both kind of alluded that domestic violence is not just about the physical abuse. You
right.
also talked about like isolation, him not wanting you to go to class, control, emotional abuse, verbal abuse. And even economic abuse, like controlling the money. I don't know if you experienced that. But so a lot of people think that, oh, if you're getting hit, that's domestic violence. There's a lot more behind it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I feel like it's not just physical because, you know, for me, one of the biggest damages, like, is the emotional and mental.
Because it sticks with you, not like a bone that heals, they say. Like an emotional wound can stick with you for your life.
Right, that's true. You know, when he would start insulting me, I would just voluntarily ask him to hit me. Like, I would just like, if he's like starting to call me all these names, I was just like, can you just stop and can you just hit me? Hit me because...
Painful?
Yes. Like, my body's already used to the pain of being physically hit. But I just, like, the emotional, like, it's very hard to over, like, you know, words can impact a lot. Like, you know, it's a lot, words. And sometimes, especially when it's coming from the person you love, it's really heart-shattering, you know? So, yeah, and then the control also sometimes, you know, like, when the words start to come in, like, it starts to mess up with your head too. And I think like you're like this is, oh, I don't look good in this outfit or whatever, like, oh yeah, I need to work on this on my body, because that's the person you spend time a lot with and that's the person you love, right? And then they're giving you all this negative feedback and insults, so that's slowly penetrating in your head. And then the control of like where you're gonna spend your money, how you're gonna spend your money, you know, like for me, like the control was every time I get like, let's say a blouse, right? And I show it to him, he'll be like, if he doesn't like if it's too revealing, it's only allowed for sleeping.
I'm sorry.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, so like in public, like I would only wear his t-shirts or, you know, but any blouse like I buy, it's for sleeping only. And I'm like, then why did I buy this? Like, this was like, you know, for you, like, you know, to look at, but it's like, yeah, I'll look at it when I'm sleeping. Like,
yeah. Well, when you you said that your family, you didn't tell them a lot when you left, but they were pretty much supportive, or they agreed with your decision. How about your friends? Did you share with your friends why you left the relationship, and did any of your friends help you, or what was their response?
Yeah, when I told my friends that the reason why I wanted to leave is because he got into drugs, and they were like, okay, let's get you out of there. They were really helpful because they know that that's not what I want in my life. And they know that they know there was more than that for me. They've always, like, wanted me to go, you know, but I've never. And, like, I've always, like, they know that I would always choose him first. But for me to say that I don't want this and this anymore, then, you know, they took that opportunity and ran with it. Yeah.
Can you tell us exactly how you left?
I left. Okay. So I caught him, you know, participating in that thing. And so I broke it off. And then even if I didn't know where I was going, where, you know, like all my family left to the States already. I only stayed behind because of him. I didn't know where I was going, what I was gonna do. So you know, but I know I was being abused already, like I know I was getting hit, right? But like, it was just so overwhelming for me already that, you know, I just wanted to leave already. So what I did is, I knew there was help out there, but I didn't know where to ask help from. So I Googled, you know, I believe I put, I'm getting abused, where do I go? Saipan? And then the Women's Coalition's number or information popped up. And then I got to talk to Macy. I did it when he was at work. So I got to talk to her, and she's like, this is what you can do, these are your options. So then I talked to my friend that same day, and she's like, okay, we'll get you out of that house, like, you and your dogs. Because one of the things I was worried about was, where am I going to bring my dogs, you know? Like, maybe the small one, I can take him along, but I have a big one. Like, where am I going to put these guys? Like, they cannot live in this house. So my friend's like, no, you'll take we'll take both of your dogs, we'll take your things, and you come with, live with us. So while I was planning that, she's like, why don't you sleep over at my house for the weekend? So I was sleeping over at her house for the weekend, and I'm getting messages from him. He's like, why are you not coming home? Like, who the hell are you with? Like, you know, and I'm just ignoring it. And then I think the last video I got from him was him, like, shouting at my small dog. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm leaving. Like, I'm just waiting for Monday, because it was off on the weekends. So I was waiting for Monday when he goes back to work so that I can go in, get my stuff peacefully and my dogs. And then that was it. So the weekend, I slept at my friend's house. And then first thing in the morning at 8 o'clock, I know he's not there. I went and got my things and I left, and I never turned back.
And now you're smiling.
Yes, now I'm smiling and looking at mirrors.
Can you tell us why your dogs were so important to you in this situation?
Yes, my dogs they've always been the only source of happiness I was feeling in that house. You know, they comfort me when I was crying, they comfort me when I'm sick. Like, they were just like that spark of light in that I was living in. So they're very important to me. Like, I would fight everyone for my dogs. Like, no way, no, nobody's gonna take my dogs away from me, because, you know, like, they're like my kids, right? They gave me hope, you know. They put my head in straight, like, you know, like, to see a person hurt them, like, punch them or, you know, kick them, it really hurts me. And I always, because of that action, I wanted it more. It more get out of that place more.
So that was actually happening.
Yeah. Like, when my dogs does, like, something that, you know, doesn't suit him or whatever, he would, like, hit them. And, you know, as a mom, you don't like your kid, right? You would fight for your kids. So I think I got a mama mode, and that motivated me. And I feel like they're also one of the reasons why I got out, because it wasn't a safe environment for them at all. It was a sad living. Like, it was a sad life for me and them. And I wanted more for us.
The reason I asked that question is because when we first met, one of the things you were talking about was your dogs and how you had to do something for them that day or something like that. And I could see that, you know, they were, and you were talking about how much they meant to you and how much they had helped you. When you were leaving, did you feel at any time that, and trying to break off the relationship, did you ever feel you were in danger?
At first, no, when I was leaving, because I was avoiding him, and, you know, he probably thought I was just retaliating that I don't sleep over. But when I really left and took all my stuff, and I got those messages, yes, I hit, like, so how the system was, how the system works is that they give you temporary restraining order, and then a week later you have court, right? So for that whole week, I didn't want to go outside, or if I'm going outside, I'm wearing a hat because I'm like looking over my shoulder.
Like, a hat is really good to describe.
I know. Well, I saw it in the movie. I saw it in the movie.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, like I was just hiding. Like, I tried to avoid the places I know that he might be. I don't have an explanation why I did that, because I already have the temporary restraining order. I think it's just that the fear of him seeing me out there, because I did get all those threatening messages from him. And I don't know if he was going to execute them or not, but then, you know, I was just scared at that time.
So you received threats?
Yeah, I received threats. He said that if he sees me on the road, that he's going to beat me up. He's going to F me up. So, I mean, people might say oh, he's just words, but no, he can F me up. He's been effing me. He's been doing that to me. They're not just words. It's real. He did those to me. And if he does see me alone on the road, who knows what he's capable of doing, right? So I was scared for that whole week. Yeah. I filed a restraining order the day I took all my things at his house and my dogs. I filed a restraining order the next day because of the text messages he sent me that night. So then after that, I got a 1-year restraining order against him. And that's when I felt better. I felt safer. But when I do see him on the road, right? There's the one time I was walking my dog on the path and I saw him, and I know he's looking at us. I kind of just yanked my dog towards me and I just kind of let us disappear. I don't know why I was feeling that way, because I know I had a restraining order, I can just call the cops. I think it's more of psychological effect on me that, you know, even since I haven't seen that person, when I see them, they can make me feel that way. Yeah.
And how long has it been now since you left the relationship?
I left the relationship June of 2020. So it's about a year and half months or so months. But this June 2021, I celebrated my 1 year. Yeah, I did. I had cake and I had party hat, happy Jenniversary. I wanted to celebrate my freedom. That's what I remember.
Well, it's nice to see you smiling. I know, and I do want to talk a little bit about healing before we finish our chat today, but I know one of the things that you really hope to cover in your podcast is how you feel either our cultural upbringing or our family situation growing up can attribute to either, I guess, being a victim of domestic violence or even a perpetrator. So do you feel that that had any influence in your situation?
Yes, definitely. You know, one of the things is I always thought if you left your parents' house, right, don't come back. That's one of the things I've heard, I grew up knowing. So even if, during those times when I was with him and my parents were still here, even if I wanted to leave him, I'm just, one of the choices I was thinking of, wait, do I get my own place? Or, or do I live with my parents? And sometimes financially, you can't get your own place yet, even if I was working. So I'm I don't want to go back to my parents, you know? And also, I think the idea of the guy is the man of the house. or something. Like, you know, you have...
Like, what does that mean to you when you say the man is the head of the house? Like, what does that mean to you?
Like, he makes the final decision. Like, you know, you don't really have a say as a woman. Or, like, you just do the cooking and cleaning and stuff like that.
Kind of like a dictator versus a partner type thing?
Yes. You know, like, when they come home, bring their sleeper to them and let them rest, you know, come home from work. Like I saw, you know, growing up, and that's what I was taught growing up. But then now, like, the more I'm exposed with women, strong women like yourself and other people, I've come to realize, like, no, it has to be, like, equal. You know, I bring in bread, you bring in bacon, and we eat dinner together. You know, so, but, you know, back then it's almost like, not back then, but the way I was taught is just like more traditionalist, I guess. Like, you know, it's always the guy, you know, right? The guy's always right. Or, and also, like, whatever problem you're having at your house, like, keep it inside, like, don't share it, you know, fix it among you. Because this is the person you chose to be with, so fix it among you guys. Like, those were the things that kind of factored in for me to, like, stay longer. Yeah.
Are you aware if your partner ever had experience with, like, domestic violence or abuse growing up?
No. I wasn't aware of it. I don't know about it. He was pretty much, like, the only child, so I think, like, you know, he was pretty spoiled. So, no.
All right. What advice do you wish you could have given yourself, a younger self, before you got into a serious relationship like this?
Finish school.
Well, say it again. That was really good.
Yeah, finish school, you know. Finish your education. You know, relationship can come and go, you know, but education sometimes, you have to stick with it. And that's what I always tell my daughter now. My daughter's 19 years old, and I always tell her, like, you gotta finish college. Even if you're 10 years, finish it. Like, you know, that's, like, trust me, like, one day you're gonna thank me that you did that, you know. But she's still finding her ways, and she's thinking of taking classes, like, little by little, because she says she's not good at school. And I'm like, everybody's not good at school, but they just try harder. So finish, I think it's, like, for me, it's finish at my education. And it's okay to love someone, but don't forget to love yourself first. Yeah.
So talking about healing, I would say in my situation, it's been really good. I was able to forgive my ex-husband after a few years, and then he actually ended up apologizing to me and my son a few years after that. And we have a good relationship now. We can talk to each other. So I thank God for that. What has been instrumental in your healing? I mean, I've said more than once that when I meet you, you're usually glowing. Like, you're usually smiling just like you are now. Like, how have you gotten to this point?
Prayers. A lot of prayers. Like, building my relationship with God, rebuilding my relationship with God really helped me and understand, you know, myself more. And forgiveness. I forgave myself, you know. I forgave myself for allowing this to all happen. Like, I always tell myself, there's a purpose, you know, that God let this, like, this happen to you. So, one of that, and forgiving him. Even if he hasn't apologized, I don't think he'll ever apologize or ever acknowledge the things that he's done. It's okay. I already forgave him. And I just wished him the best in life, you know. I mean, there's times when I do talk about what happened to me. It, it makes me cry or I get emotional, not because I was still feeling the pain of it or, you know, the trauma of it. It's just that I guess it's like a happy, like sad and then quickly goes to happy tears that, girl, you did it. Like, you know, like, it's a big, for me, like, it's a big accomplishment to survive a relationship such as mine. Yeah.
And I think it's really beautiful that you can cry because it shows that you still have a soft heart.
Oh, thank you. I do have a soft heart.
One of the really awesome things about your story, your journey, is that you are now helping other women in this same situation. What are some ways that you're doing that?
And men. Yes. So I'm doing this podcast because I wanted to spread awareness, and I want people out there to hear that it's not just you. You're not the only one that's, you know, that's going through this. Like, a lot of people has gone through this, you know, spreading awareness. And also, I volunteer for the Women's Coalition. And then I also have this organization, the Men of Women of Destiny, where the aftercare of, you know, survivors and overcomers of domestic violence, sexual assault, like, we're just there to help them out. You know, if they need to go to an appointment and they don't have babysitter, that's us. Yeah, you just call us and, you know, we'll watch them. Or if they need transportation, that's what we want, is to help, because we've been there, right? I've been there. I'm like, sometimes when I got out, I didn't have a car, so I would ask friends around, and luckily, thank God, you know, I have friends to take me around. But what about those girls that doesn't have cars, right? Or doesn't have money for taxi? And we want to be able to be that. We want to assist them with that. And just talking to people, like talking to different women that has gone through, like, I think talking brings healing. The more you talk about it, the more it heals you. So those are the things that I'm doing.
I love how you chose to use the word versus victim. I mean, you could be a victim, but then you can also choose to become an overcomer, right?
Right. That's true. I think, like, there's a certain part, you know, I think there's, like, a process, you know, like, of when you're taken out of a situation. First, you're a victim, right? You know, you do all the court, the paperwork, like, you know, TRO, blah, 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 right? Medical, whatever you need. And then what do you do with yourself after? After you do all the government or all the legal issues, right? Like, what do you do with yourself after? You can't be a victim. So it's time to, like, to overcome it. And it takes a while, but, you know, with the right people and right environment, it's not impossible. I've done it. A lot of girls done it. And that's what I just hope, like, for anyone out there that's going through it, you know, going through any struggles in their relationship, know that one day you can be an overcomer too. Yeah.
I think it's really valuable, actually, for everybody to be aware of, like we were talking about earlier, the cycle and the different forms of abuse, because, like we said, they tend to think it's only one thing, you know, the beating up, but it's so much more. And I think, do you have much experience working or talking to men who have been in this situation? Because I just seem to feel like they would be especially vulnerable to not realizing that it's what's happening to them may not actually be healthy or normal or legal if they're in this kind of situation.
Yeah. The thing about talking to men, it's hard for them to open up. You know, it takes a while for us not, but I have talked to someone who was emotionally controlled by their girlfriend, you know? Like, he would fear that, he used to fear that if he talks to girls, like, or he even looks at girls, like, they're gonna fight. So he doesn't look at girls.
And to some people, that's like normal relationship.
No, it's not. Yeah, to some people, yes, I understand, but it's not. Like, people can look at people. It's like, when you look at me, it's not like, you know, you're cheating on someone, right? But he particular person, it was hard for him to make eye contact at first, even if it was out of that relationship. It's just that, you know, because he was afraid that someone's going to get mad at him or shout at him and, you know, cause a fight with him when he does make eye contact with another, with the opposite sex. And it's not just physical, like, you know, there's a lot to it. Like, you know, the mentality, the emotional. And sometimes, like, even if they're out of that relationship, like, you'll still catch that person doing a certain attitude or certain ways their past trauma. Yeah.
I think as we come down to the close of the show, it's important to remember that people can change, but they have to be willing to change, and then they have to take the necessary steps to change. And it's difficult for people to do that. It's difficult for them to say, I'm wrong, I need to change, and I need to do X, Y, Z. I need to get counseling. I need to go to anger management. I need to talk to a mental health professional to figure out, you know. So I personally do not want to say, like, there's no hope for anybody, but if nobody's willing to change in the relationship, it's best, I would say, to leave the relationship. It's difficult, though, when you have children. What would you say to people in that kind of situation?
You know, I forgot what it was that I read, but they always tell us, like, don't have children just to keep the relationship, right? Have you ever heard of that saying? Like, sometimes, like, girls have have children with other guys just to keep the relationship. And also, you know, it's not for the kid to see mommy getting this. You know, mommy getting slapped. Mommy's crying in the bathroom floor. Mommy's not coming out of her room. It's not healthy. And I think, like, I know it's hard because there's a life involved, but for me, like, as a mom, do right by your child. Like, if it's hurting your child, then get out of there, you know? Like, take your baby, all your babies, including your fur babies, and go, because it's not a healthy environment for a kid to see mommy and daddy fighting or shouting at each other, you know, or mommy comes out with a black eye. And I believe that children, they're very smart. Kids are so smart. And we just have to talk to them and have an open conversation with them. And they'll understand, you know. When I was raising my daughter, she never saw it, but she knew, you know. And she would, like, always tell me, like, why are you always sad, you know? And my daughter was 8 that time. If an 8-year-old can see your emotions, you know, and what more if they're growing up in that kind of emotion? So if being in a domestic relationship and you want to stay there because of the kid, I'm sorry, but that's not a good enough reason. You know, like, get you and your babies out and do what's best for you guys. Yeah.
Well, Jen, coming down to the end of our interview, I really want to thank you again for letting me participate in your podcast. Mm-hmm. And I would like to send love to all your listeners out there, and to those who are currently in a domestic violence situation, even to the those that are perpetrators, you know, there is a path to healing. It's not an easy path, whatever we choose, but there is a way. And if we're willing to open our hearts and do the hard work, to be to be better, either to better ourselves independently out of the situation or to better ourselves for a future relationship or whatever it may be. I'm going to turn it back to you for the final word, as it is your podcast.
All right. Thank you so much for being here and doing this with me. For listeners, thank you for tuning in with us. Please come back again next week as we talk more about domestic violence and cinema culture. Lastly, if you are experiencing domestic violence or know someone who might be experiencing domestic violence, please call 911 and or our victim hotline 670-234-3878. Thank you, and we'll see you all next week. The CNMI Speaks Out has been made possible in part by a major grant from the Northern Marianas Humanities Council and the Department for the Humanities. Any views, finding, conclusion, or recommendation expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the Northern Marianas Humanities Council or the National Endowment for the Humanities.